This is Madeline Davis interviewing Portia. Okay, my first question that you've had a few minutes to think about has been in thinking about our writing, the history of the lesbian community, and in people reading that history, what do you think are some important things that people should know about?
I think one of the things that people should be aware of is that conditions change and that the community is something that's never static. And one of the things that I think has changed a lot for the benefit of especially younger people coming into the movement is that I think it's becoming easier to meet people and easier to form new relationships. I think one of the benefits of the movement is that it's taken gay life out of its restriction to bars and out of the underworld. I know when I came out in the lesbian community 10 years ago, that everything you read and your all your life experience is always pointed towards the gay underworld. And they spoke as if, you know, it was, I mean, there was always you were living two lives. You were living your life in society and then you were living a covert life in the bars and that revolved around secret meetings in people's homes, closed parties, and very covert activities. Relationships were secret and friendships were secret. And you didn't acknowledge other gay people in front of straight people. And things were just, you know, more covert then. I think the advantage of the gay movement is that it's brought things out into the open. People are aware that we're around now. Gay life has gone from being totally thought of as, you know, sexual abnormalities and things that needed to be cured to more of alternate lifestyles and a way of life that requires and deserves civil rights protections. I think it's much easier for younger people to come out now because of more ways that there are for them to meet people. There's gay community centers are becoming more popular and they offer functions for young individuals, all-aged individuals, where you can go and be together and socialize and have people to talk to. And it's out of a bar drinking scene, and out of, you know, just where you have to know some, you have to meet somebody that's already involved in a group. In the old days, I remember when we started that most of the lesbian friends that I became acquainted with, I became acquainted with through other friends. You would get invited to somebody's party, and be a close party, and that's where your contacts were extended. You know, now there are open functions that you can meet people at.
What year are you talking about, the old days for you?
Would have been late 60s, early 70s.
Mm-hmm. So your introduction to what you see as the gay community was 1960.
68,
69. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you think that it's a lot freer now. Can you be open everywhere now?
Everywhere? Mm-hmm. No. I haven't come out in my job. I'm a federal employee, and although there supposedly is federal protection now that you're not supposed to be able to be released for homosexuality. I've been employed for less than a year, and in the government, when you've been employed for less than a year, they can release you for any reason at all without telling you why. you chew gum and they don't like the fact that you chew gum, you can be released. So, but even after the year's out, I'm not sure if I'll come out. I mean, I speak about homosexuality a lot, and everybody knows that, you know, I'm a, you know, I take the cover of being a civil rights advocate. Everybody knows I'm for women's rights, and, you know, I've been branded as the, you know, the feminist in the group, and they think I'm a radical, and they know I'm, you know, for black rights, and I work in a small community that tends to be very racist, and so they just consider that one of my other, you know, one of the other flags I wave. I don't think anybody's put two and two together and figured that I have any personal interest in the movement. Although they are aware that my sister is also a homosexual, and I think maybe they think that that, you know, that is part of my interest, that I'm interested because of, you know, it affects a family member.
Did you tell them that your sister was homosexual?
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
Well, it kind of came out in a roundabout way. My sister is involved with a professional athlete, and some of the people that I work with had seen these women teams play, and there were a lot of comments made in the office about the women that played on the team, and they thought that, you know, that they probably were all a bunch of dykes. And I think I got involved in a conversation on homosexuality in women's sports and why there was a higher incidence of lesbianism in women's sports than there maybe would be in women pottery makers or something, you know.
Yeah.
And when they asked me, you know, what was my source of information, I just said, you know, my sister lived with a professional athlete. So it came, you know, came out that way.
Okay, let's do a little bit of your history. How old are you?
26.
Okay, and you were born in the Buffalo area?
Yeah.
And you lived with both your parents?
Right.
All your life, and brothers, sisters?
Right, I have four brothers and a sister.
And you said your sister is gay. Are any of your brothers gay?
Not that I'm aware of. My brothers are all younger than I am. Two brothers nearest in age have always been very involved with women. But they also have, you know, they always had girlfriends from the time they were puberty. But both of my brothers are also very involved with their male friends, too. And it's something that I, you know, that very, very close friendships, and one person leaves the area and gets a job somewhere else, and pretty soon all their friends are joining them. So they have a very close network of friends. So I think they relate pretty well to other men, too. But I think their sexual activities are limited to females.
At about what age can you recall feeling different?
Never did really feel different. You know, I mean, I felt like I always felt, and I didn't have any other standard to judge it by. First time I ever felt that there was something to hide, guilty about something, I was 17 or 18. Up to that point, I hadn't, you know, I hadn't thought about anything, you know, other than, you know, it was just the way I was used to feeling.
What happened then?
When I was 17, I began my relationship that I'm still in currently. And at that time, my feelings for that other woman, I had only, you know, I mean, I knew I loved her, but I also knew, but I hadn't defined that love yet as sexual, as a sexual love. And the best word I can use is I was obsessed with her. You know, she was in my thoughts, you know, all day long, and it was very obvious to the people around me because a conversation couldn't take place when I wasn't speaking about her. Her name came up all the time, and if I wasn't with her, I was on the telephone with her, or thinking about when I was going to be with her next and what we would be doing. And my parents put a label on it before anything sexual had ever happened, and they began, you know, trying to talk to me about it and accusing me and asking me if a sexual relationship was going on. And at the time, there wasn't. And I guess they recognized the, you know, the symptoms in me before I was ready to recognize them or accept them in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time I began feeling guilty about it, I think because my parents were making me feel, you know, that there was something to hide, when in fact, at that time, there was nothing sexual going on.
Do you remember what they said to you?
That just that it was unnatural that somebody was so obsessed with another person of their own sex like that, and you know, that it was unhealthy, and that I think my mother initially tried to be very understanding and just tell me that, asked me if I couldn't see what was happening to my relationships with my other friends. Ever since I was a young child, my mother had always encouraged me to have many friends rather than have just your one best friend, your one close friend that you were dependent on all the time. Probably because, you know, when I was little, if your one best friend was busy, you were lost. You had nothing else to do. And so my mother said, you know, if you had more than one friend, you wouldn't have that problem. So then I, you know, I always tried to have, to work within a group and to have a group of people that I was close with. And I had. I had been very involved in high school and in athletics and was very friendly with, you know, all the women that, you know, young women that were on my teams. And I was also very involved with music, and I had another group of friends that were, you know, into music. And I was on yearbook, and there was another group of friends that were involved in the yearbook. And all of a sudden, when I met my lover, there seemed to be time for nothing else but her. You know, all my other activities started to end, and my music started to take less meaning. And, she was an athlete, so you know, I still was involved in sports, but mostly it was, I turned from team sports to individual sports, and it was, you know, competing against and playing with her rather than with
like tennis and
badminton and
mm-hmm.
you know, racket sports mostly.
Mm-hmm. Did your parents use the term lesbian or homosexual?
Queer was their, you know, was their word.
Mm-hmm. Did you know what that meant?
Oh, sure. I had vague, you know, I mean, I knew a very infantile definition, a little kid's definition. You know, I knew that somebody that was queer meant somebody that liked people of their own sex rather than people of the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had never thought of myself that way throughout my whole life because although my life has always centered around women from when I was little, and all my friends were always girls once I became of school age, I had been dating in high school, you know, and I definitely was into being a, you know, typical little girl at the time. You know, I would set my hair and put on makeup and put on pretty dresses and nice stockings, and I liked getting dressed up, and I liked getting taken out, and I liked somebody bringing me flowers and buying me presents. You know, I was, you know, I was very into the dating scene at the time,
mm-hmm.
and was having a good time with it. As a matter of fact, at the time that I met my my lover, I was quote unquote going steady with a very nice person at school. You know, a guy that was a couple years older than I was, and I liked him a lot as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Never was into heterosexual sex at the time because I was brought up as a strict Catholic and good girls didn't do things like that, you know. I think one of the ironies of my upbringing and one of the things that's contributing, that has contributed to no guilt feelings now, is when I was growing up as a young Catholic. You know, our nuns and priests always, it was drilled into your head about the importance of modesty and how bad it was, how bad sex was with, you know, what you did with little boys was dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And only married people could do that. And it was the lack of knowledge of the priests and nuns and their, you know, their real short-sightedness that they only
they only define sex as actions that took place between people of opposite sex. Like, I can remember one of my first confessions when I was maybe 8 years old. I used to play doctor, quote-unquote, with little girls from the time I started school. You know, I mean, I always had my little companions, and we would get undressed in front of each other and giggle because we knew we were doing something that was naughty, but never, I mean, never dirty or anything like that. We would tickle each other and draw with lipstick on each other type, you know, play all these little games. And I can remember thinking that maybe this was something I shouldn't do, and confessing it in the confessional when I was maybe, you know, 7 or 8 years old. And the first question the priest asked me was, well, you're a little girl, aren't you? And I said, yes. And he said, well, were you playing these games with little boys? And I said, no. And he goes, with other little girls? And I said, yes. And he goes, then that's all right, honey. You have nothing to worry about. And it was just, you know, just a total lack of knowledge that anything would be taking place. So I never had guilt associations sexually or any sexual inhibitions with other women. But when I had a sexual relationship with another sixth grader when I was in sixth grade. Every Friday night we would sleep at each other's house. And
this is a girl.
A girl, mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. And her mother was a divorcee and used to have a lot of erotic magazines around the house and sex manual type things. And we would read the books. And our first, you know, experimentation was strictly clinical. You know, we were looking at diagrams and trying to find, you know, sexual organs on each other and stuff. And then we recognized nice feelings that came from it. And while I slept with this girl every Friday night for 2.5 years, we were just friends. There was never any love bond between us at all. We never spoke of loving each other or anything like that. We just knew we were doing something, you know, we giggled about what we were doing, and we looked forward to Friday nights because our activities felt good, but there was no love between us at all. But I never felt any guilt about that, you know? And yet, when I began high school dating and got involved in the dating scene and did high school petting, I would go home at night with terrible, terrible guilt feelings, that letting a boy touch me was wrong and was dirty, but letting a girl never touch me never was wrong or dirty. And it just never struck me that way.
When you started to see the woman that you say is still your lover, that's almost 10 years.
Yeah, it would be 10 years this February.
Yeah. How were you able to communicate to each other the kind of relationship that you wanted?
Initially, we weren't able. My roommate, lover, is older than I am. And like I said, I became obsessed with her almost from the start. I think I was really impressed that somebody older than I would take an interest in me. And it started out as a very, you know, student-teacher type of relationship. You know, she was definitely the leader, and I was the protege. And, you know, she was, as I said, she was older, and she was a college student at the time. And in, you know, she was in sports and physical education, and that was something that I had thought about doing and had wanted to do. And so she took me under her wing and was going to teach me different sports and teach me how to do things. So it was more like, it started out like a hero worship. And I just became more and more dependent upon her and realized that I was caring more and more from her. And like I said, I wanted to be close and I wanted to touch, but it wasn't from a sexual drive. You know, I mean, I didn't have sexual fantasies about her or fantasize about sleeping with her or anything. I wanted to cuddle and I wanted to be close, and I think that maybe she served more as a mother substitute than she did as a, you know, a sex partner.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, and when we finally began sleeping together, I think we were camping. Yeah, we were camping, and. The first overt act of affection came from me, and it was just, you know,
was getting time to go to sleep, and I was laying down next to her in our sleeping bags, and I just, you know, I rolled over and put my arm around her just to cuddle. And that's just, that's all we did that first night, and I just cuddled up next to her. And it wasn't until a few days later, when we were on vacation, that she made any sexual overtures towards me. And like I said, I've never been plagued by guilt feelings of having a sexual relationship with a woman before. And I wasn't then. I was just prepared to, you know, accept whatever affection she was going to give to me. And at the time, like I said, there was no sexual drive involved. It was just, to me, it was a matter of cuddling and being, you know, held and being close. Of course, after we got into it, you know, 6 months later, that was a different story. But, you know.
It was 6 months before you actually started a regular, like, physical relationship?
Oh, well, no. The time when the first sexual overtures took place, we were on, we had gone to New York and we were on a vacation. And we spent a week in the city. And although I tend to make light of the effect on me and say that I didn't have any guilt feelings, maybe subconsciously I did, because about the fourth day I had to go to a hospital. It ended up, I had a bleeding ulcer, and we didn't know what it was. I thought I was having a heart attack, and I had to be rushed to the hospital. But, I mean, obviously, this didn't arise just during that week that I was in New York, you know. I've always been a kind of perfectionist with myself, an obsessive compulsive personality, and it was my, you know, right after my junior year in school, and it had been a sort of rough year. I had changed schools and was trying to, you know, get real good grades and get involved in all sorts of activities, yearbook and things like that. So it was a high pressure year, so it was probably just had begun during the year, but it started to bleed when we were in New York, and I had to go to the city. And I think maybe that it was just maybe that was upsetting me a little bit. I think more because it was upsetting her. That was the first time I ever really heard the words lesbian used, except for my parents before, who had been asking me if we'd been having this kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And she had never been involved with women before, ever. And as a matter of fact, she had never had any close female friends. Her world had always circulated around boys. She had three brothers, and her friends were always her brother's friends. And she began dating when she was quite young. She just never had any close female friends. I was her first close female friend. And her first words when we had finished our first sexual encounter was, "I wonder if the fact that I've slept with you once means I'm a lesbian." And it seemed to bother her more than, you know, maybe that made me a little nervous, I don't know. But she was upset by it. And she definitely was upset by it.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards she cried and swore she would never touch me again, and it was all her fault. And she was feeling guilty because she was older, and she felt she had to take the responsibility. But like I said, I was entirely receptive, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you think you were alone? Did you have any idea there were other lesbians in the world?
I had heard about them, of course. And when I got back home and went back to school the next year to start my senior year in school, I began to try to find books and do reading. Of course, what capped this all is, unfortunately, the week didn't stay to be a nice, pleasant, low-key week. We were staying at my aunt's house in New York and had been sleeping in my aunt's bed. My aunt had been sleeping out on the couch. And the last day that we were there, we got caught by my great aunt.
Mm.
And of course, you know, she knew that my lover was older than I was, and was totally convinced that my lover was the ogre, and the whole relationship was her fault, and that I was just a young, impressionable child that had been taken advantage of. And she felt it her moral duty to call my parents and inform them of what she had found. So when we got back into town, my enraged parents were waiting for me, and my parents, of course, had called her parents and threatened that if she was ever near me again, they were going to sue her for contributing to the delinquency of the minor, the whole bit. So our lives radically changed after that week.
But we didn't stop seeing each other. It had to be more covert than on the sly. And I guess that's when guilt feeling started. You know, it's when I quickly was brought to my attention that these were things that just weren't done. And so a deviation was definitely a deviation and wouldn't be tolerated by my family or her family or, mm-hmm. or the school system or anything.
What do you mean by the school system?
Well, at that time, she started teaching at the high school I was going to.
Mm-hmm.
And she had graduated from college during the summer that we were in New York and gotten a job teaching at my high school. And I had been initially assigned to, just by fluke, assigned to her classes. And my father quickly saw that I was taken out of her classes, and he tried to have me banned from after-school athletics. You know, the school forced me to come home right after school so they knew where I was. And they tried to get her not to coach. And eventually, I ended up, after a full year of you know, horror and threats and stuff, and getting the school to ask for her resignation towards the spring of the year. And said, you know, made it very emphatic that if she didn't resign, that she would be fired. And so she resigned. They let her finish out the school year, but you know, wasn't to come back. She wasn't to come back the next year.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel at all responsible for her being fired?
Oh, totally. She got the... I think... Well, I know. My parents... We became quite covert about being together. Initially, when I got home, I felt compelled to deny that anything had happened. I just laughed off the incident that my aunt had seen as a, you know, a bedtime wrestling match. And neither one of us had any clothes on at the time, but I made light of that. And my father knew that I've hated clothes since I was a young child and would never wear them, but, you know, any time I could get away with not wearing them. So I think my father wanted to believe that it was nothing more than a bedtime wrestling match, you know, a tickling match, wrestling match,
mm-hmm.
and tried to convince himself that I was normal. And, you know, he had never seen or observed any other signs to the contrary. I definitely wasn't the little butch type that, you know, baby butch
mm-hmm.
stereotype of a kid, so you know, I think he tried to pretend that nothing else was going on. And at the time, the school system said they weren't going to send me home from school. That was something. It was a family matter, and that my parents were going to see that I came home at 3:00. Fine, but they weren't going to be, a police department. And so I joined every after-school sport that she coached and managed to spend times with her there. And finally, had gotten on better terms with my parents, so that they would let me see her limited times. I could start out. Well, my roommate is very, very good, very skilled in racket sports, and I was going to compete in a local tournament. And they knew that she had coached me and taught me in that sport, and that I needed coaching again if I was going to be successful in the tournament. So they said one day a week I could go with her to the university to practice. And then as the tournament got closer and closer, it was Friday nights at the time, it could be Friday nights and Sunday afternoons, so I was able to see her twice a week,
mm-hmm.
besides seeing her at school. And, of course, at school it was a matter of getting there early and running down to the gym to see her before class and running down to the gym at lunchtime to see her at lunchtime and running down to the gym before the school bus came at night, you know. So, but with my parents' permission, I got to see her twice a week. But then it was like, you know, being addicted. I kept sneaking more and more time until about January or February, my parents found out that I'd been sneaking out around their back. And they felt that they had given, that they had allowed me to see her a couple of times a week, and that I was taking advantage of the situation. So they kind of put the kibosh on it and said, no more, once the tournament's over, you know, no more weekend activities. And then when they found out that I didn't listen to them and lied and went around seeing her anyway, that's when they formally went to the Board of Education and demanded her resignation.
Mm-hmm.
I remember she got called down to the principal's office, I believe on Friday, and told that she was being asked to resign. And she met me after school on Friday and told me what had happened, and she was very upset. And on Saturday, I had a babysitting engagement. I was an avid babysitter. I used to babysit, like, you know, almost every night.
And I was babysitting, and I was babysitting at a pharmacist's house. And I remember getting very depressed and thinking it was my fault that her world was caving in and that she would, you know, I made everything go wrong for her, and if I wasn't around, she would be much, much better off. And I attempted to commit suicide by swallowing a half a bottle of codeine pills that I found upstairs in my medicine chest. And fortunately for me, the people came home from their engagement and found me passed out on the bathroom floor and immediately called an ambulance. And I had been sick all over myself, and when I got to the hospital, they told me that I was lucky I had an allergic reaction to the codeine, and it made me throw up, and if I hadn't been allergic to it, I wouldn't have been around to talk about it. So I definitely did feel guilty about, you know, that it was my fault. I think because I'm the much more persistent person. From the very beginning, I was the one that pursued her. Although I wasn't the sexual aggressor, I definitely was the social aggressor. You know, I'm the one that made the first overtures of friendship, and I'm the one that insisted on the meetings, and I'm the one that wanted to be with her all the time. And I think once the incident in New York took place, when we got home, if it had been she and anybody else, that would have been the end of the relationship. But I was just so obsessed and so determined to see her all the time. And I knew that. And I knew that had it not been for me, she would have been happy to go back to her bosom of her family and never have another girlfriend in her life and, you know, just go back to her male world. And so, I definitely felt responsible.
But you went from that situation to now being together 10 years, so a lot happened in between.
Yeah, well, okay. She handed in her letter of resignation, and for the end of the year, and we persisted to see each other, continued, and behind my parents' back. And I had made plans to go away to college to study phys ed, and had applied to a number of schools and gotten a number of scholarships. So I was, you know, prepared to be separated from her in September to go away to school. And my father had, you know, been trying to monitor my activities a little more and find out what I was doing. And I remember one Friday night I went out. Oh, but I had been planning on, as a prelude to going away to school, I had been planning on moving away for the summertime, subletting an apartment around the university for the summer, just to get used to being on my own, and because it was going to be our kind of last fling. I knew I was going away in September, like I said. So I had already made initial attempts to rent an apartment, and I was supposed to go into this, it was a university apartment, go into it as soon as I graduated from high school, which is, you know, middle of June or whatever. So that's when I was going to begin. I was going to begin paying rent the 1st of June. So I got an apartment behind my parents' back. They didn't know I was going to do this. And I had my 18th birthday party in May. And my friends all knew I was going to get this apartment. And they kind of, it was kind of like a homewarming party instead of a birthday party. I got things like sheets and towels and stuff. And my mother was still so stupid she didn't, you know, realize what was going on. And so anyway, I had been prepared to move for the summer. And it's one Friday, towards the end of May, I had planned to meet my lover after one of her final exams in graduate school. And I met her up at the local drugstore, and we talked for a while and went and had a sandwich. And when I got back home, my father asked me where I was. And he was a little bit evasive, and I just told him I was out. I said, were you with that woman, seeing that woman? And at that point, I thought, shit, why lie? You know, it's the truth, you know? And so I said, yeah, you know, I was. And I proceeded to, he started yelling at me, and I proceeded to turn on my heel and go upstairs to my room. My little sister was laying in the next bed, sleeping. And my father followed me up to my room and started beating me to a pulp. Gave me a fat lip and a couple of black eyes and just really pounded the hell out of me. And I was too proud to cry. You know, I just sat there and let him do it. And when he was all finished, I said, you know, sat down in bed and I said, well, are you finished? I hope it makes you feel better, you know. Well, maybe you can face this. He got violently angry and demanded all my bank books and my checkbook. So I went downstairs and got him my savings account books and my checking account book. And I had already withdrawn all my money from my savings account and put them in my checking account, maybe anticipating that there was going to be some kind of confrontation. So before I brought down the checkbook, I ripped out the first check and signed my name and made it out for the full balance of the checkbook and put it aside so I could go to the bank the next day and withdraw the balance of my funds. Brought down the checkbooks, the savings account books, which had zero balance, and handed those to my father. And he was furious when he saw that all the money had already been withdrawn. So then he was ready to give up, and my mother said, "She keeps all her money in her checkbook. That's where her job's been, sending her pay checks to her checking account." So he made me get the checkbook, and I handed it to him, and he demanded that I sign a check. And I refused. He got very angry that I would defy him and not send the check, and I refused. And he hit me, and I still refused. And so he said, "Well, he could get the money without my signature." Mm-hmm. And he took the checkbook. And the next day I went to school. It was moving up day. Mm-hmm. Senior class day, or whatever, you know. And I had a new dress and the whole bit, you know. Went into school with this big swollen mouth and these black eyes. And they must have been met that Monday. Yeah. So it wasn't the next day, a couple days later. And one of my teachers that I was friendly with at school, who also was friends with my roommate, saw me and asked what happened. And I told her that my father had beaten me. And she had heard that I was planning on moving away from home. And she said, a friend of mine was there who had graduated from high school, was just there visiting back from college. And she asked my friend if my friend hit her car, and she said, "Yeah." And she goes, "I'll give Holly a pass from school to go out of classes for the rest of the day. Why don't you take her home and do what has to be done?" So my friend Carol took me home, and my mother was not home. She was bowling, and my father was working, and we packed up all my stuff and drove over to the apartment that I had leased. Like I said, this was the very end of May, and the students had moved out, and I went and spoke to the landlord and asked if I could move in a week early, and saw no reason why I couldn't. So that day, I moved all my stuff into the apartment, and I wasn't there when my parents got home from their activities.
Were you able to get your money out of your checking account?
Yeah. First thing we did was went to the bank, and mm-hmm. we got the money out of the checking account. My father never did process the check, but it was just, you know, that was just, he didn't expect that I was going to take that action. He gets home, and of course, my sister had witnessed the beating, because she mm-hmm. was in the bed next door, mm-hmm. you know, in the same room. She was afraid my father was going to kill me. mm-hmm. So she, that night, after my parents went to sleep, she had watched me pass. So she was aware something was going on, and I had gotten everything together. And, so, like I said, you know, I moved out that day. My parents found me. I don't know how they found me, but by that evening, dinner time, they showed up at my apartment. And I had no idea where they got the address. I don't know, have any idea, you know, who they contacted, because nobody knew. And I don't think I left anything written around the house or... You know, maybe there was a newspaper that had circled apartment numbers. I don't know how they got it. They showed up there around dinner time, and my roommate wasn't there. As a matter of fact, she didn't even know where to contact me. This friend, Carol, that had taken me there was there and helped me set up housekeeping. So my parents just looked around and made sure that I had a roof over my head, and I stayed for about a half an hour and left. And that was the last time I saw or heard from them until the next Christmas. I had left, I had walked out of the house, and I had separated my life from theirs, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Until about 2 days before Christmas, and then my mother called me up and said that my father would like to see me at Christmas dinner, and would I appear, you know, for dinner at Christmas. And that was the beginning of the, you know, the mending of the relationship. But back to my relationship. We had a real crummy summer. I got a job at a 2-bit restaurant. My hours were like 6 a.m. to 2. I had no TV in my apartment and no car. Taking a bus down to work every day. And my roommate was petrified of her parents. And they, you know, they ran the house and they totally controlled her. She didn't know how to say no to them. So our wild summer, or summer of reckless abandon that we were going to have before I left for school, ended up being 10 minutes of seeing each other every other day for the whole summer.
We didn't live together, these little parents.
No, no, she still lived with her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I was desperate, and I think my roommate at that time was trying to, you know, trying to withdraw from me and trying to end the relationship, and I had figured that I had risked and lost everything, and that here she was still in the bosom of her family, being loved and, you know, had the security of having a family around her while I was estranged and little, you know, just turned 18-year-old kid out on my own, no friends, no, you know, no car, removed from everybody. And I guess I began to resent it. And towards the end of the summer, when it became quickly obvious to me that I couldn't afford to go away to school. My parents weren't going to help anymore, and my scholarship had been for tuition and stuff, but not for room and board. And I didn't know what to do, and every time I saw my roommate, I would ask her for her opinion. She'd say, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know." I'm just kind of withdrawn and, you know, not real supportive. So I finally made a last-ditch effort to, at the end of August, to get accepted at the University of Buffalo. And my grades had been real high in high school, and I went to a counselor at the university, and he was very sweet, and he really called my high school to find out what my scores were, and he admitted me on the spot. You know, made, pulled some strings, and I was admitted immediately, ready to start school the next day, or the next week when school opened. Well, about the end of August, my roommate came over one day for one of her 10-minute sessions and informed me that she wouldn't see me for the whole weekend and that I shouldn't worry that, you know, she would see me on Monday. And I asked her where she was going, and she told me she was going to New York with her father. What are you going to New York for? Well, she was going to New York to find housing. I said, well, what for? Well, I've been accepted in the graduate program at Columbia to go to graduate school there. I'm going to go work on my PhD. This was the first I heard of it. It was the end of August. That weekend they were going down to find the housing, and the next weekend he was going to be taking her down, moving her down there. That was how they were going to separate us, get her away from us. So I was really upset because she hadn't discussed it with me, and she hadn't felt that she had to. You know, it was her own decision.
Let me backtrack just for a second. How they were going to get her away from you. They had an awareness that there was something wrong about the relationship?
Oh, yeah. From the first time that the incident happened in New York that my aunt had called,
right.
My parents had called her parents and said, you keep your daughter away from our daughter, or we're going to sue her and you for corrupting.
So they didn't think it was simply a pillow fight or whatever?
I'm not sure exactly what they thought. But they hadn't been pleased with our friendship from the very beginning. Because my roommate comes from a very close Mediterranean family, and like I said, she'd never had any girlfriends before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, she had always had a kind of relationship with her parents that if she got out of school at 3 o'clock, and it took her 10 minutes to walk from school to home, they expected her in the door at 3:10. Not at 3:15 or 3:20, but it took 10 minutes to get home, you were home in 10 minutes. And you never went to somebody else's house to spend the night, and you never went to somebody else's house to play. If you weren't at school, you were home.
Mm-hmm.
And people weren't welcomed in the house, and you weren't allowed to go out.
Mm-hmm.
So they just were not prepared or had never encountered an outside influence in the family. It was the family and nobody else. And here all of a sudden is this young squirt, a young teenage kid that's drawing their daughter away from their close-knit family group and getting her daughter to go out and play tennis and go to the show and go into week trips in New York City. You know, these things just weren't done. So I was nothing but a bad influence as far as they were concerned, with no redeeming features. So they had been pushing this, you know, separation. So she did go to New York. She went to graduate school at Columbia. left me on my own in cold, heartless Buffalo. And I moved, changed apartments, and as a college kid that I'd been subletting from, came back. And I ended up getting an apartment further away from school. Buying my first car, 1964 Verte, for $25. Getting it fixed up for another $35 and running it into the ground for a year and a half without putting another penny into it. Then I started school, started the university at Buffalo, and made new friends. Got back to going around with a group rather than one person. We go down to New York to visit her maybe once a month on the weekend. But I did this 3 or 4 times, and come about Thanksgiving weekend when I went down there, things just weren't the same. The old sparkle and magic just...